Welcome, Advocate and Care Manager listeners, to this, our first coronavirus COVID-19 related podcast dealing with how we as professionals can step up during this time of crisis. I'm Tricia Torrey, the Executive Director and Founder of the Alliance of Professional Health Advocates, AHPA, and I'm very pleased you've chosen to listen in today. We hope you'll take away some useful information to employ during this virus-related crisis. This first podcast addresses the care needs of patients and families and the roles of advocates and care managers in making sure their clients get what they need. Additional podcasts will address cost needs of patients and families in outreach and marketing, how we as professionals can make sure the public knows to contact us for help. We'll begin today's podcast with introductions, the professionals who've joined us for this first conversation about care needs. Anne-Marie, will you start us off?
Sure. My name's Anne-Marie McElwain. I am the owner of Patient Advocators. We are located outside of New York City, and our clients are all over the country and sometimes other parts of the world. We're probably best known for cancer and mental health, but we kind of do it all.
Excellent. Thank you. Claudia.
Yes, thanks for having us, Tricia. This is Claudia Cometa. I'm a clinical pharmacist by profession. I own Peace Advocacy Group, which is PEACE Advocacy Group in North Central Florida, based out of Gainesville, but I do serve those around the country. I mostly have, based on my geography, elderly patients and parents of the adult children who live elsewhere, but I serve pretty much anybody who needs to reclaim their voice in their journey to wellness.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Linda.
Good afternoon. My name is Linda Beck. I'm the principal in Square One Elder and Health Advocacy here in California. I do work in other parts of the country, and I work primarily with older adults and family caregivers to manage healthcare issues and teach people how to get safer healthcare.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Lisa.
Thanks, Tricia. This is Lisa Johnson. I'm the owner of Chesapeake Health Advocates located in Maryland. I work primarily with the elderly and those with chronic disease and complex health needs. I'm a registered nurse and continue to work at the bedside as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Stacy.
Hi, this is Stacy Hansen. I'm a board-certified patient advocate, CEO and founder of Stacy Cares Oklahoma, LLC. I work in advocacy, appointment accompaniment, and visitation services for seniors all across Oklahoma.
Thank you so much. Teresa.
Hi, I'm Teresa Astorita, owner and founder of Remedy Health Advocacy in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I'm also a board-certified patient advocate and a certified registered nurse practitioner. And I work with adults who require assistance navigating any issues within the healthcare continuum.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And by the way, listeners, you can find each of today's experts in the AdvoConnection directory. Links to their directory listings are found on the same page where you found this podcast, along with some other resources that we've put together for you based on this podcast as well. So now we're going to get started. There are already some issues that are arising with clients that some of you have observed. Let's talk about them and some of the things you're going to do and are doing to help your clients as a result. So, for example, we have lots of clients who are lonely. Linda, will you talk to us about lonely clients and the things that you're doing to help them?
Thank you, Trish. Happy to. One of the ironies of this situation is that isolation is now being recommended, and we've just been through the first round of reports on studies of how isolation is very, very bad for people's physical and mental health, especially for older adults. It's one of the hardest things to avoid. So for clients who are lonely, I try to get them connected through a community organization, like a faith community or one of the service organizations that they may have been part of in the past, Rotary, Kiwanis, Elks, things like that. There are also, in some communities, village organizations, part of the village-to-village network, and essentially those are groups that provide support services for older adults who are living in their own homes. Another piece that I've been working on is a phone tree, which basically is having a small group of people, each call a small group of people, to check in, see how they're doing, and really provide kind of a first line of contact, where if a person can't be reached for a day or 2 days, you go on to the next level, which is to get in touch with an emergency contact. And then after that, if there's still no contact, you have to think about whether you want to request a welfare check from one of the public safety organizations.
Excellent. So, Linda, let me ask you quickly to clarify a little bit. When you talk about reaching out to organizations that maybe they used to belong to, you mentioned, I think, the Rotary and the Kiwanis. Obviously, they can't go there. They can't go to meetings and so forth. What are you doing to make that connection for them?
A couple of things. A lot of these groups are very quickly setting up online activities, whether it's a Zoom call or a webinar or just a group conference call or a meeting in a park. People are getting pretty creative.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much. Teresa, you had something to say, too, about clients who are lonely and other kinds of disturbances along that line. Will you speak to that, please?
Yeah, sure. So I think with this pandemic, there's an unfamiliar threat that draws out anxiety in all of us. And many of us do feel like we certainly do not have any sense of control, and that's actually where this hoarding and stockpiling behavior comes in. So I think as advocates, whatever we can do to promote calm and instill hope and empathize people's fear and help normalize the stress reactions that they're having, and then referring them to references or resources where there's clear guidance on the specific health behaviors that they should be undertaking.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Lisa, you have something to say about the elderly specifically and even solo seniors. We have lots of names for them, but will you speak to that, please?
Sure, Trish. What I have done over the past couple of weeks is to reach out to my elderly or solo clients to offer emotional support, to let them know that I am here. They can speak to me. They can call me. If they are feeling anxious over something in particular, we can chat about that and try to get questions answered. I think there is so much uncertainty, as has been mentioned already, that sometimes just having someone to bounce an idea or concern off of provides a great deal of emotional support, letting them know that they are not alone, and certainly ascertaining if there's anything in particular that I can help them with.
Excellent. I think that sometimes just that outreach, just that one-on-one outreach to people who are alone, we say you're not alone, but they are. And so I think this individualized outreach is just, I think it's very important for all of us to do, especially those people we know who are home alone and may need that extra support. It overlaps a little bit with the next issue that we've run into, and that is clients who have no way to get out. They can't get groceries. They can't get other necessary staples. Lisa, you had a unique approach to taking care of this. Will you tell us about that?
Certainly. So in speaking with my clients, I have been asking, if they've been able to get supplies in, groceries in. And for those who are not particularly computer savvy and who do have a computer, I've actually undertaken the task of talking them through placing an order or downloading an app to help with that. And so that has helped them. I'm teaching them how to place those orders online so that they can use that in the future as well. That is something that I've actually talked to them through via phone.
I love that, because actually what I've heard from a lot of people is that client education is so important, and they're absolutely right. Client education is important, but it's not the answer to all possibilities, but you've actually taken it a step further. You're teaching them a skill, and that's a skill they're going to be able to use long past anything having to do with a virus or a pandemic. So I appreciate that. Stacy, you're doing something that I love with free resources. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, thank you. I am cultivating a list of resources locally here for Oklahoma City. to connect people with services that provide medication delivery and delivery of meals or groceries. And I am pushing that out on my social media accounts.
Okay,
and
excellent.
Also making that list available on my website.
Okay, good. That's what I wanted to know, too. Very good. So people can go to your website at any time and find this list of free resources that will help them get what they need. And I think that's very important. And another group that we're finding, and sometimes they're the same people, is clients who have ongoing medication needs, not necessarily related to the virus, but maybe they have diabetes or a heart condition and they're taking pharmaceutical drugs on a regular basis. They need prescriptions. Claudia, will you tell us a solution to making sure they have those drugs they need?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a really important point because a lot of these maintenance medications are life-saving for a lot of our clients. And so the first step is to take an inventory and identify what medications we're dealing with, if we haven't already done that, and then identifying which of those we have a limited supply. And by limited, I really mean less than 3 months. We don't want to stockpile and take from others, but we do need to be cautious and try to have 3 months if possible, because we don't know what the situation is going to be if pharmacies are eventually going to be limited and close. And so it would be prudent to have 3 months if at all possible. So the inventory of what these medications are, which ones we have less than 3 months supply of, and beginning to call the pharmacy to let them know we are looking for a 3 month refill on these. They will take care of the insurance part because they adjudicate these claims at point of service. So they will send the request bill over to the insurance. If it is not allowed or they come through any problems, they can troubleshoot those. So that's not necessarily anything you need to do on your end, but begin the conversation with the pharmacy with the list of those that you would like to refill and that you are requesting 3 months, if at all possible, through the insurance. Also take note that many states now have emergency refill orders, executive orders in place. Those differ from state to state, but if normally you wouldn't be able to refill that medication because you have 10 days left and you would have to wait, that waiting period is waived. So just take note that in your state, you may have that ability to refill even if it's technically too early in times of non-pandemic.
Excellent. So it occurs to me that it would be a good idea to reach out to every client. Some of our clients are perfectly capable of doing this on their own if they're well enough to do it. But you need to remind them, right? You kind of have to light a fire under them. They may not realize that this 90-day supply is really a key that you're talking about. And others you might want to do it for. Are you doing both for people?
Yes, so I definitely give the option of me doing it for them. Most of my clients are capable of doing this. They're well-versed in that. But I did start that process early. If you have not, this is the time to do it because there are already many medications, including inhalers, and asthmatics need their inhalers, that are becoming difficult to get. So the time is now.
Okay. Thank you so much. Another area that we already know is being addressed and questions are being asked is that of end-of-life, advanced directives, decision-making, and so forth. I was wondering whether any of our experts today had been reaching out to their clients to offer to assist, and Anne-Marie had a unique perspective. So, Anne-Marie, will you share that with us?
Sure. So I put out a blog a week ago entitled Advocacy in the Time of Corona. And one of the things that I discussed in there was the need to have your affairs, i.e. your medical story or your medical resume, whatever you want to call it, at the ready. Because we if you are going to find yourself in a hospital on an emergency basis, odds are that no one from your family who knows your medical story will be able to accompany you. And therefore, you need and should have a one-page document that very quickly provides the medical team with what they need to know. And so included in that should be obviously your name, your date of birth, your diagnoses, your medications that you take, your pulsed and or advanced directive if you don't have a pulsed, your healthcare proxy, all the things, and your insurance, so that they can very quickly understand your particular case and make decisions that are in concert with your body and what's going on in your body as well as your wishes.
And would that include a DNR?
If I would think particularly include a DNR right now to cover any worst case scenarios with respect to COVID-19.
Sure. And Lisa, you actually had kind of a unique perspective on that DNR thing. You want to talk to us about that?
Certainly. So because COVID is an acute illness, and with the more severe cases, patients are being intubated and placed on ventilators, you may suggest to your clients, and they may want to review their advanced directive decisions about end-of-life care. Because in this case, with COVID, if you run in, if you, you develop respiratory distress, the likely path would be to place you on some sort of assistive device and likely a ventilator. So you would need to know in advance whether you want to alter your advanced directives specifically for COVID infection. And then, of course, you can change it. They can go back and change it after this situation back to their original decisions.
Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting point. And Stacy, you had one more thing to throw in here. Will you share it with us?
Yes. We may be looking at healthcare rationing coming out as we progress into the following weeks. So,
and tell us what that means. Tell us what rationing means so that everybody is very clear on what you're raising here.
That means that your healthcare providers may need to make decisions about whose lives they save and who they take off ventilators or put on ventilators. And they're going to need to prioritize that based on something. So it would be good to encourage patients to have those, especially those potentially facing intensive care, like with COVID-19, to document their wishes with an advance directive saying, do you want to be intubated? And then also, ask them what future quality of life would they find acceptable, and under what circumstances would they refuse a ventilator? And having that in writing could end up helping their physicians down the road if their physician gets into needing to ration health care at the facility where your client is.
Yes, because you could look at the medical life story, as Anne-Marie calls it, or healthcare resume, as some of you have called it. You could look at that and take an assessment and say, you know what, this person's older and they have two comorbidities, and so, no, they're lower down the list. We're going to save this younger and more able person. And what they might find out is actually something about that person. So not only do they need to be talking about what their desires would be, but also kind of who they are and what they do and why they make a contribution to society. Because already in other countries, rationing is taking place, and we know it's going to happen here as well. I don't want to dwell on that. I just want to raise this issue, which kind of takes us into the next part of what we're talking about, and that is we've just talked about things we've all been hearing about in the media, but we're also talking about situations where there are all kinds of things we haven't started to hear enough about. A simple one is we already hear about a lack of enough tests. But then in the last couple of days, all of a sudden we're hearing there's such a lack of tests that now they're telling everybody not to get them. So my point here is that we have to be prepared to come up with solutions for questions that aren't even being anticipated yet. Or, as Linda called them, as we were preparing for this call earlier, unanticipated consequences of the decisions that are being made now. So for one of the questions would be, for instance, if there's a lack of hospital beds, who's going to get them? If there's a lack of ventilators, who's going to get them? And as Stacy said, these are questions of rationing. Who's ignoring these non-virus-related symptoms? We know there will be deaths. People will be grieving the loss of their loved ones. Funerals may be delayed or may not be delayed. What is our role as advocates and care managers? Bills will begin to arrive, some that should arrive, some that shouldn't. Will there be surprise bills that should not be arriving? What can we suggest to clients? Now, we're not going to talk about billing today. There will actually be another podcast that will cover billing. What I'm trying to show you, listeners, is that there are questions that are going to require responses from you that you may not be prepared to respond to. So how are we going to do that? What are our best practices going to be for answering those questions? And Claudia, I think you're prepared to talk to us about some of those best practices.
Yeah, I think the first important point is to define the problem before we can really attack it and find solutions. We have to define what we're dealing with, and that includes both the umbrella idea and concept of a pandemic, but also the sort of sub-issues such as the medical system itself, some of these psychosocial issues. So defining and categorizing the problem is first and foremost, and then researching existing resources. So there are many resources that already exist in our community, and much has already been stated as has been stated on this podcast episode, is there are resources out there, but compiling them and allowing our clients access to them by giving them the knowledge that they exist is helpful. And then finding an expert. So there are many experts. I'm doing this myself on my podcast, is finding the experts who can really preemptively talk about some of these frontline issues that are happening, such as in oncology or primary care. So finding an expert, whether it's within our profession of patient advocacy or if it's just on the front lines, whether it's pharmacy, and tapping into those resources, and then discussions in the discussion forum within our community, and asking for experts as you need them.
Excellent. Those are great tools. That's a great approach to solving these unusual challenges that are going to come up. We will make this list of this approach on the resources, so look for it where you found this podcast. All right, group, let's talk about tools. We've got to keep our practices afloat, and we certainly need to keep ourselves and our loved ones safe. So how are we going to provide services to our clients while we also take care of ourselves? I'm curious about what kinds of tools you're already using. Lisa, what kinds of tools are you using?
So I am encouraging my patients to utilize video when possible. I'm trying to direct them as to how to install an app such as Zoom if they need to, or using FaceTime if they have it available. And I'm also encouraging them to use that to communicate with family members and friends to help them have some contact with others. So it helps me if I would like to lay my eyes on them, and also connecting them with certain providers who are using that same technology.
And that takes us to telehealth. So Linda, talk to us about telehealth. Explain to us exactly what it means, how it's different from just video and audio, and then how it's being made available.
There are a couple of different sort of versions of this, and the first one that came to my mind was the procedure for a client or a patient to communicate with an established provider. And that's just a matter of getting on whatever app or service they're using and arranging an appointment the way you would make an appointment to go into the office. It saves you the disruption of finding transportation, getting there, and all of the exposure that we're being warned about in this unique situation. So there's that piece of it, which really is another way to keep up with routine health care, for instance, staying on top of a chronic condition like congestive heart failure or diabetes and so on. The other flavor, for want of a better word, is the group of online services that will provide medical advice on sort of an ad hoc basis. These are numbers you can call to connect with a healthcare provider someplace in the universe who will, you know, look at your immediate situation and provide sort of next steps. That is something that I have not had clients do to this point, because most of them have an existing provider that will at least be a starting point for the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
More and more providers.
What do you find about the difference between, or have you found a difference between people who have an insurer that covers telehealth and then has a specific tool that they want to use versus some that don't? Are you finding both directions?
Yes, and because of the importance of keeping people separate, a lot of providers are going to the things that the rest of us use, like FaceTime and like Zoom and some of the other tools that are available online commonly that would not ordinarily be acceptable for healthcare because of HIPAA concerns. CMS
right,
has backed off. Go ahead.
No, I was. You go ahead. Finish the sentence. But CMS has backed off.
Backed off on violations, penalizing violations of HIPAA, to make it possible for healthcare providers to communicate with their patients more freely.
Right, right. They have really backed off on the HIPAA rules for now. And we say for now, we don't know how long that will last, but certainly during this pandemic, it's going to last. And I find it interesting that you say some of them are going to the tools that we're using. So I would say if one of your clients really needs to see a doctor for something routine or even for a new set of symptoms, the first thing you could be doing for them or they could do for themselves is to call and say, hey, can we do this in some video or audio way? Yes, exactly
remotely.
Right. So, very good. Stacy, nursing homes and audio and video and telehealth, do you have anything to share with us about that?
Yes. So what I'm noticing here in Oklahoma, and the rest of you are probably noticing where you are, is that the lockdown on nursing homes is having quite an impact on the resident populations and their ability to communicate with their families, and then also pulling on the resources of the nursing home staff. So, for example, now a lot of the staff time needs to be dedicated to helping those residents stay in contact through video calls, through iPads, and that kind of thing. And so as a new business, I'm thinking about, you know, how can I stay afloat in a time of COVID, especially when my business is so heavily geared toward one-on-one accompaniments and visitation, which I can't do right now. So I'm using email to put together a list of all the nursing homes in the state, and I'm reaching out to offer my services with help with communicating, helping their residents communicate with their families, seeing if they need help with newsletters or with conference calls or anything that I might be able to contribute to ease the loneliness and also the burden that the staff may be having in those facilities.
Okay, so that's a question of using video and audio as tools. Although you're saying you're going to go there and you're going to be using those tools with the residents of the nursing homes, perhaps the staff. But would you also be doing telehealth appointments with some of the residents from there?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And that would be another area. Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Email is another tool. Anne-Marie, tell us about how you're using email to do outreach and to educate your clients.
Sure. I used the opportunity of my blog to reconnect with every client I've ever had over the 5+ years, and I put a question in the cover note in the email in which there was the link to the blog, and I asked my clients to share with me what they are finding in their markets, because, again, going back to the beginning, my clients are all over the country. And something I have routinely done in my practice is to what I call cross-pollinate, meaning with clients' permission, I have actually put some of my clients together over the years to share experiences either with hospitals or treatments or specific doctors. And my hope here is that I can help my clients understand better, you know, creative solutions right now to solving their healthcare problems when we don't have the same kind of access that we're accustomed to.
Well, I love that, because what you're doing is using email, which is a very safe tool for all of us, pending, of course, electronic problems, but in terms of the coronavirus, it's a safe thing to use. And you're asking them a question, sort of getting their own creative juices flowing in how to solve these problems. So I think that's a great idea. Are any of you accompanying clients anywhere to appointments or to the store or anywhere?
No.
Okay. Good. That'll keep you safe. We mentioned earlier that the HIPAA rules are being relaxed for the duration, but that certainly does not loosen our obligations as advocates to adhere to our ethics. So what are some of the ethical guidelines we want to keep at the top of mind as we move forward? Teresa, you have a good one to talk about. This is something I think needs to be top of mind for all of us.
Yes, I think it's important to keep a lookout for any scams that might be occurring right now, as well as price gouging. And, you know, the scams can involve offering free testing kits to cleaning your ducts in your home and sanitizing those ducts, to maybe even marketing for maybe a diabetic test kit where they will also throw in a free coronavirus test kit. So it's really important that I think particularly over the next few days that we reach out to our clients and stress the importance of looking out for scams and price gouging.
And that they can call us as advocates to ask, what do we think? They've heard from such and such. They've been offered such and such. Do we think this is a good idea? And we'll help them assess whether or not it's something they should move forward with. Linda,
Absolutely. You
had a specific interest in what happens to them when they get to the hospital, if they get to the hospital.
The issue that's topmost on my mind is whether people's individual right to make their own decisions is going to be compromised in this very, very fraught environment. There's already a tendency among healthcare providers to overlook particularly older adults who may have hearing problems, who may be unable to speak clearly, and I'm concerned that healthcare providers are going to pass on to the third-party decision makers, whether it's the healthcare agent or the proxy, and ask them to make decisions that the patient is still capable of making for themselves. So I think one of the things we have to keep at the forefront of our minds is the question, what does the patient say they want? And make sure that the healthcare providers are exhausting those possibilities before they bring in somebody else to make decisions for someone.
And that actually takes us back to an earlier part of our conversation. We know we probably are not going to be there at the bedside, and we also know that family members are probably not going to be there at the bedside. And so as Anne-Marie talked to us about putting together this sort of healthcare mm-hmm. resume, this list of medical facts and perhaps our advanced directives to make sure that if one of our clients goes to the hospital, that packet of information goes with them. That helps them protect those rights. And Stacy, you actually raised an interesting point in our conversation before we started our podcast about what could possibly happen with some of our clients, in particular solos.
Yes, well, we need to reach out to particularly our solos to make sure that they have a proxy selected. Otherwise, we may find ourselves in a situation of being asked in with a very short turnaround time because of how COVID-19 progresses quickly. You know, we don't want to be caught up short in that position of being asked to be a proxy. So we should reach out to our solos and then also look at our liability insurance and talk to our insurance about it.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, the question of being a proxy, I mean, we've started working in some ways in advocacy on the idea of guardianship, which is a similar kind of a question, where you shift from that position of always putting the client front and center to make decisions for him or herself versus making decisions on behalf of your client. And as you say, Stacy, this is so fast moving. We don't know when we would be put in that position and we aren't prepared for it. So if we have that conversation ahead of time with clients, we will be better prepared and they will be better prepared in case that comes up. All right, that takes us to our final question of our podcast today, and that's something that I suspect you're all going to differ on. It's really more food for thought for listeners, but I want them to hear what you have to say about it. There is such a tendency for many advocates all the time, not even in the time of a pandemic or a crisis, to volunteer their services instead of charging for them. This has come up. This person is desperate. What am I going to do for them? And I just want to ask a couple of people, what are you doing? Is that coming up? And how do you handle it instead? Claudia, what do you have to say about volunteering?
Yeah, I think this is a really important point because I think we all come into this, you know, field of advocacy because we're nurturers by heart, and whether it's something that's happened to us or family members. And so we have a sincere passion for this, and that passion can easily sort of bleed into overutilization of time we don't have, especially if some of us are solopreneurs like myself. So the way that I have been able to sort of give back to my community and others is through allowing free access to my online course, which is a comprehensive look at how to reclaim your voice in your own wellness journey. Part of that, actually, and we've already talked about this in this episode, is establishing a healthcare portfolio. We've talked about it being a resume. The nomenclature maybe not so as important as just having, a binder full of information that you can take with you at any time. And so part of that is going through that, but it also is sort of the whole A through Z of what I feel is important. So that is a free and available to my clients, but also just whomever would like it, including any advocates. And I believe Tricia will have that link with the coupon code. It's free through April 15th. But I do think that there are ways in which we can provide free resources to our clients and our community, even in the midst of not being able to that being time, one-on-one time with our clients.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And just so everyone knows, Claudia has built this online course. And how much do you charge for it?
It's right under $200, so it's $199, and so this will be free to whomever would like it.
And she's providing it to any of you who are listening for free as well, and there will be an access to that on this same page where you found the podcast. And, Stacey, you had such a great response to this. You've got people asking you to help them out. They can't afford your services. And what is it your response is? I love this.
Well, I definitely have the inclination to volunteer. But when I do, I go research other resources. And if I find that there's already someone out there providing a free service, then I push that service out and get it in front of my clients and the people who need it. And that way I can see that I don't need to do that, and I can turn my attention to something else.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, because why should you do it for free if somebody else is already doing it for free? I really appreciate that piece of advice. Excellent. Well, thank you to all six of you. For our listeners, we've covered a lot of issues for you today, but mostly what we hope we've provided you with is some tools, some maybe unique ways of thinking about things, some reasons to reach out to your clients and make sure that you are top of mind with them and that they will call you should they need you. We've talked about what to do in situations we already know are going to exist or already exist, and even how to tackle some situations that come up we might not even know about right now. We've talked about tools, we've talked about HIPAA rules, and we've talked about whether or not you should be providing services for free. So I think we've covered quite a bit today. That does conclude this podcast. It's one of a series created to support advocates and care managers during this pandemic time. Please be sure you bookmark this page on your browser with a link to the podcast and the resources we're providing to you, too. We will continue to add more podcasts and information as the need warrants. I'm Tricia Torrey, the Executive Director and founder of the Alliance of Professional Health Advocates. I thank you for listening, and I invite you to watch for more of these podcasts. We all have a role to play in helping people weather this crisis, and we hope we, as AFA, have provided you with some ideas and approaches to doing your part.